Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIALBJ's.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the New Media and Hooters Restaurants, capital of the world, Tampa Bay, Florida.
Stage here in Austin, 8 seconds left in regulation, North Carolina and Oklahoma tied, the Tar Heels with the ball, Oklahoma the number one seed, and Carolina came in an 8th seed. Rick Fox has been the big weapon with 21 points for Carolina, and Patterson will take him on the inbounds pass. They'll come through Davis, and he'll come to Fox. Fox comes down the baseline and hits it. Carolina wins it. Carolina upsets OU. It was Fox cutting over to the right and getting daylight. He then, after a brief fake, came down the baseline and hit the layup. 23 points. But none bigger than that winning field goal there.
Think about seeing your life flashing before your eyes. All right, got that picture? Now think about Rick Fox's life flashing before your eyes. First round NBA draft pick by the Boston Celtics, 1991. 7 years and 3 world championships with the Los Angeles Lakers, playing elbow to elbow with Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant. Marriage to the most beautiful and most famous Miss America ever, Vanessa Williams. Fatherhood with the same Miss Williams, now a star on ABC's Ugly Betty as Wilhelmina Slater. Now, did you see the part of his life flashing by in which the tall, handsome, former athlete became an actor? Now, it started with a few small parts here and there, an inmate on Oz, a recurring role on Courtney Cox's Dirt, and Angela Bassett's love interest, Angela from St. Petersburg, I might add, love interest in Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. And while Rick and Vanessa did divorce, he did appear as a guest star on her show Ugly Betty, playing her bodyguard, Dwayne.
Will do, Will. Oh, and I got a call from Alexa.
What is that?
Did I forget to introduce you to Dwayne, my new bodyguard? I can't keep checking over my shoulder to see if that crazy Claire Mead's running after me with a bottle of acid.
So can you just attack anyone?
If he feels I'm in danger.
Oh my God! It's Claire Mead charging for us!
Help! Release Dwayne.
Next week, Rick debuts in the recurring role of a restaurant owner on the CW's new version of Melrose Place. And speaking of actors, the latest issue of TV Guide has a picture of Fox with his longtime friend and new girlfriend, Eliza Dushku, star of Joss Whedon's The Dollhouse on Fox. And now he's preparing for one more big role, celebrity host of Acme Saturday Night at the Acme Comedy Theater in Los Angeles this Saturday night, October 24th at 8 p.m. You can order tickets, see him live, or watch it stream online at www.acmecomedy.com. So, Rick's life or yours? Whose life do you want to see in your final moments? I'm going with his. Rick, welcome to Mr. Media.
You guys are connected.
Rick?
Hello, good morning.
Hi, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. I'm trying to collect myself. I was just flashing on how much more exciting your life seems than mine.
Oh, no. Why do you say that?
Well, I don't know. Basketball, beautiful women, acting. Tell me something that brings your life back down to earth with the rest of us mere mortals. I mean, you pay taxes, right? You pants go on one really long leg at a time like the rest of us?
They do. I've probably failed miserably in most of the relationships I've had, including divorce. Let's see what else I can add to that list. I've had career-ending injuries, so I've went through health concerns. But yet I think I've had a pretty blessed life, so it'd be hard for me to make a list on that in that column that would match the one where things have gone well.
Well, you're a fair and decent man for pointing out the faults and alongside the good stuff. But let's focus on the good stuff. I mean, congratulations on the Melrose Place gig.
Thank you. It's been an exciting entry for me again into television, and especially in a show where it's had success, in the recent years, and now it's returned. It seems to be our remake of television shows for the CW seems to be a way to revitalize the network for this coming season. Or at least, I guess last year they had 90210, and it's worked for them. And this year, Melrose Place.
How did this come about for you?
I've become a bit of a family to the CW, in that a lot of the work I've done recently on television has been through the network there, and so I've stayed in contact with the casting department. When things come up, I go in and read. And in this case, I happen to be perfect, I think, for the role, because as a club owner here in L.A., those that know me in L.A. know that I've one of the closest friends runs pretty much most of L.A. nightlife, and when it comes to the venues, I've been partners in some, and been around and been seen or in most of them, and so that character was right up my alley.
Was this character already written, or was this written with you in mind?
I think no, it was already written. I think they based it, primarily on a couple characters here in town that have been, known in L.A. nightlife as mavericks or leaders in that field. And I just happen to be really close friends with one, and I know another one of them really well. So I think it's a staple in L.A. nightlife, the character itself. And so going in and having the opportunity to play it was pretty natural for me.
I was just thinking about this. This is going to seem like a kind of a crazy question, but I have a nephew. Bear with me for a second. I have a nephew who played basketball around the same time you did. He's 6'6", 6'8", and most of the pictures that I have with him, he's a great guy, but most of the pictures I have with him, he either has to bend down into the shot, or if the shot is me from the shoulders up and him from the waist up. And I'm here's what I'm wondering. When they shoot you in these TV shows, or film for that matter, do they have to make adjustments for your height?
It's probably one of the most challenging endeavors for, I think, the director or for a cinematographer. Tall people work in the entertainment business. I for my own sanity in career, I keep a tab and I keep an eye out for those people that are my height or if not taller that work, so I don't feel like I'm heading down a track that's inevitably insurmountable. But they are, and it is the challenge, and it's all about framing. It's about framing two people on camera together, and I take my shoes off at times in medium shots or close ups. I've worked my way around over the years figuring out how to block a scene where I can either sit into it or lean into it or position myself in a way when we do block it that gives the director maybe less of a challenge. But you're absolutely right. It's in some ways, Spike Lee gave me probably some of my best advice when I asked him, how do I get around this issue of my height when it comes to getting roles or being in scenes where that issue is a concern. And he said, well, you just have to be casted with other tall people, which would then, I guess, make me automatically, you know, a leading man potential where a show or movie is casted around me as opposed to me having to fit in. But it takes, obviously, in that sense, then me having enough of a track record for someone to bank on me as a producer that way. So you kind of still have to fit in for a while. You have to fit in for a while some way and do great work for them to then flip this, you know, the script around and have things, you know, cast it around you.
Well, maybe. Okay, just maybe if you continue to succeed in getting roles, maybe this could be an opportunity for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's big comeback, you know?
Finally,
you guys
finally,
could...
yeah, maybe. I think about my time in basketball and how in that world I was average height. And I never saw myself as tall. I never really thought I was a tall individual, even though if I walked the streets, I would come in contact with those where, you know, for 99% of the time I'm the taller person. But I mentally, I don't know if it's just that I'm a mental midget, but mentally I saw myself as, you know, really average height in my world. So it wasn't until I got into the world of, you know, entertainment on a regular basis, whether it's auditions or on a set, that I realized, wow, you know, I am taller than everyone here.
Well, I'm guessing, you know, thinking about the years that you probably played high school and then college at North Carolina and then the Celtics and the Lakers, you tell me the math, but I'm thinking, you know, it's like 20 years of every day you'd go to work, including high school, and you're with people that you can look pretty much in the eye. And then suddenly you're out in the regular world with the rest of us, and you're towering over. That would be a little different. Yeah.
Yeah, 20 plus years, and I agree. You know, framing up on the basketball court would have been a lot easier. And in some cases, I wish there was either a world of entertainment out here in L.A. that was solely for tall people. Maybe I should start a tall acting class or production company that solicits scripts for just tall people, and we'll just cast it all with tall people.
Well, and okay, so answer me this. Why does a basketball player with the success that you've had want to become an actor? What was, you know, I mean, obviously you were around that.
Right.
But, you know, why make the leap? Not a lot of guys who play basketball have made that leap.
No, not a lot of athletes in general. Mm-hmm. You know, athletes talk about wanting to be, you know, musicians, or they talk about wanting to be actors, and vice versa, actors want to be musicians or athletes. And you know, it's mutual admiration, you know, club that they look across the aisle and see success and want to try their hand at it. But in my case, I went to University of North Carolina for radio, television, and motion pictures, and quite honestly, a lot of my focus was on a life in the NBA, as I was very talented and I could see that my career down the line was going to be one of an opportunity in that field. And so I can only remember two of my classes, one being a drama class, one being an art class, in my senior year when I was finishing up my degree, when I finally found two classes where I felt like I'd found what would have been exciting to study in school. And so I felt like I did this a little late, but I also always remembered that the joy and the excitement level I had for going to class when it came to those two classes. And so once I got into the NBA, they scare you to death and they tell you that, you know, the average length of an NBA player is 3 years and you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do when you're done with those 3 years. If you're fortunate, maybe you play beyond that. And so really quickly, I started to look for a means to, you know, to make a living beyond basketball. And so I took internships. I worked with the NBA for 2 weeks. I worked at a sports bar to see if I wanted to own a restaurant. And then an opportunity to be in the movie Eddie came along, which is a basketball movie. And I went and auditioned, and I didn't even understand the auditioning process. I thought I was just going to get the role because they called me in. I came back like two more times, and next thing you know, I was on a set of a movie for 2 months with Whoopi Goldberg and Richard Jenkins and Frank Langella and some other athletes from the NBA. But I fell in love with the two-month experience and realized that what it gave me and what I really enjoy is, you know, I love group dynamics. I love a creative expression. I love storytelling. I love that sense you get when you go out on a shoot and you're with a group of people that feels like a family. It's what my basketball dynamic was too. It was a group of 12 men and coaches, you know, out on a journey for, you know, a season with looking for a desired result. And so when I left that set after 2 months in Charlotte, North Carolina, I just realized that I had found what I wanted to do when I was done. And I didn't know if it was only going to be in front of the camera or behind the camera, but I knew I wanted to be in that group dynamic and a part of that family. And so that's where it began for me. And I just, you know, in the next summer, the next season, I just walked up to Spike Lee on the set of, on the court at the Madison Square Garden. And I said to him, I said, Spike, I know you're in the movie business, and I wanted to just ask you if in the summer, if there's any way I could come and be, you know, watch you do what you do in an apprentice fashion and see if I could, you know, learn more about the business. And he said, okay, well, let me think about that and I'll call you. About a month later, he called me and he said, look, you know, I'm doing this movie. You know, you have to come and audition, but, you know, maybe there's a way you can be a part of this in some way. And I went, and it was He Got Game. And I found myself auditioning for him and Aisha Tyler in New York. And in the closet at the time, listening to the audition without unbeknownst to me, was Denzel Washington. And we did the audition, and Spike said, that was really good. And I hear a guy starts clapping. And I'm like, where's that clapping coming from? And he literally, like, sticks his head out from around the corner. There's Denzel Washington. And I'll never forget that experience because it gave me a lot of confidence in that, you know, here it was someone I admired, you know, was paying me a compliment when really I knew nothing about acting. I was just fortunate to be natural and talented and comfortable in front of a camera. And from there, things, you know, that same very day I went up the street to Tom Fontana and auditioned for the TV show Oz. And and got that the same day. So I was having this success in, you know, in this new field of in this new career, which was parallel to my basketball career. It ended up being, you know, a 14-year career. That, you know, I was fortunate to keep getting opportunities to kind of get my foot in the door before my career came to a complete halt. I started building that career as I went along with my basketball career.
Well, and the thing that I find interesting is, you know, I mean, it's a big thing next week. I guess it's next week that you'll start on appearing on Melrose. But the and that's, you know, that's a recurring gig. We'll see you on a regular basis. But all these steps that you've taken to get to this point, you can see a career building as opposed to, hey, he's a recognizable name. Let's throw him in a big part and throw him out there and see if he crashes and burns or if he actually makes it. Here, when someone looks at your credentials acting, you can see that there's a career building there. It's not like an overnight kind of thing.
No, it's been a 13 year process right now, and it's I really was fortunate and blessed to, as you would say, to get opportunities off of my celebrity as an athlete, but I recognized really quickly in comparison to the field of athletics, when one is talented and one is given opportunity, you know, sooner than later, you'll be found out if all you rely on is your talent. And the thing I was fortunate to be was in town here in L.A. where I could be in a conversation with directors and writers and other actors and go and watch classes and then participate in classes and read scripts and I was thrown into the world where, you know, and being out here, the struggles of every other actor that you get to see and to understand and really build a career, as opposed to expecting someone to give me a career because I just have some celebrity and decided I want to one day, you know, act. I mean, if you turn and flip it over, and if you say someone showed up to a Laker facility and said, hey, I want to play with the Lakers, you know, it could really be disrespectful to everything that they do and everything, you know, that goes on down there. And so it was one thing I never wanted to do, was be disrespectful about, you know, the craft that, you know, of acting in the town and the entertainment business, because there's a lot of people here that have done this all their life and it's all they do, and it's all they think about, and they're really great at it. And some of them never get the shots that I've gotten or the opportunities that I've gotten. So I try to really be, you know, respectful of that and grateful, and I approach it as professionally as I, you know, as I know how to, and as I did as an athlete.
Now, both of the things that you've done, Rick, are performance-based in many ways. What is the difference between going on the court, being introduced at the, let's say, at the Staples Center or back in North Carolina, onto the court, and going out there, and every time you hit a basket or you block a shot, thousands of people cheer, and then now you're on a sound stage and you put in a good performance and you're all, you know, I've done a great job, and then maybe there's the sound of, you know, one or two hands clapping, but basically months could pass before anybody sees what you've done. Is it an adjustment?
Yes, it is. And it was for me too, I would say probably 5 years ago when the cheering stopped on the basketball court. And I had to work through the 5 years as I have the last 5 years and continue to explore who I am and why am I acting and what is it that I'm, you know, wanting to do as an actor? Why am I doing this? And for those, you know, there's actors and then there's celebrities and there's entertainers and then there's performers. And as a basketball player, you're out there and you get that instant result. You get the instant, you won, you lost. They love you, they don't love you. And it is the gratification hit in the back that, you know, that keeps moving you forward if that's what you're doing it for. And that goes by the wayside. Like you said, you've been on sets and you know that, you know, the director might say, you know, oh, that was a great take. Or, the person you're working with might pay you a compliment or... But it is really at this point the wrong reason to be acting if that's what you're, you know, really, really waiting around to get, because, you know, there's the awards, there's the accolades that come, there's the attention, there's the money, all the things that, you know, a lot of people, you know, want and strive for and have no shame about acknowledging. That's why they're in it. There's some people who are in it for the creative expression. There's some people that do it just because they can't not do it. And for me, it's, you know, I just can't not be in that world and on that set, and that's enough for me. That's return enough for me. And so the joy for me is to be expressive, to be a part of a story that's being told, and being, you know, the journey of finding out who I am is probably the greatest reward, because I keep searching to bring greater work to the table. I keep searching for who is Rick Fox and what do I have to offer to a character.
Well, this brings us full circle to this Saturday night at 8 p.m., where you will be live and you will have the opportunity, we hope, to hear some applause. Hopefully they won't be throwing tomatoes, but I'm betting on applause. You're going to host Acme Saturday Night at the Acme Comedy Theater in L.A. Are you at all nervous about this?
I Monday night I went through the sketch pitches and we were deciding which ones we liked, and I went through about 30 of them and it was up on stage again, and I had, you know, it is center court when you're performing on stage, and I love comedy, and I love, once again, the collaboration and the sketch improv is like being in class where you're trying things out and you're rewriting things. And I noticed when I got into my car afterwards that I'd been sweating as if I was on a basketball court, and my body was responding to, I think, just that energy that you get from being on stage. And I love it. I felt alive and I had fun. And this weekend on Saturday, I get to actually get in the game again where there'll be mistakes and there'll be laughter and there'll be things I do well and it'll be gone and done as quick as we started. You know, an hour and a half will be over rather quickly, but I'm looking forward. I really am looking forward to it. It's been exciting and it'll be challenging at the same time.
Now the writers at Acme have a habit of, they can tell when someone is a little nervous and maybe a little touchy about certain things, and they also seem to have a good sense of when someone is ripe to skewer themselves and their image. What are we gonna see with you? Will there be a little self-parody involved? Will there be some basketball?
Yeah,
some real life stuff.
It was what I was hoping for. I think the truth of who I am and where I've been and who I am in life now and is for me is all at play. There's some of the skits we have been hilarious in that way. I'm looking forward to sharing them now with an audience, but also with friends that are coming to see the show. I think there's a lot about where I'm willing to go that will surprise people. Like you say, putting yourself on stage and showing a side of yourself that maybe people wouldn't think you would do, and then laughing, laughing at yourself and laughing, having them laugh at you, is I think really where is definitely the type of comedy I enjoy doing, and I think we'll give people more insight to me, and it'll show a side of myself that hasn't been seen.
Any basketball related sketches?
Yeah, there's two, I think. Two,
okay.
The writers have been really, really great in finding humor in that, when I'm sure, they're fans, but they may not be, they don't come from that world. But they really found humor in it.
Any shout-outs to Rick Fox, the ladies' man?
Oh, I was hoping to see something along that lines. No one wrote anything about me as like a relationship guru or how to pick up women, because it would have been hilarious considering that my track record is absolutely terrible in the sense of being in a relationship. I mean, actually being able to do a relationship, so I'm getting healthier at that. But yeah, they do. Some of the women have some funny skits they've written about that.
Well, as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, you recently, in some ways, went public with your relationship with Eliza. I read about it in TV Guide this week before I knew you'd even be on this show. And I imagine that the decision to be public, outwardly public, I mean, there have been reports before, but to be openly public about it, I'm guessing, I don't know, but it would have been weighed by a lot of factors, your kids, your ex, your respective acting careers. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that where you are, the paparazzi are probably a factor in that too.
But yeah, totally. It gets to a point where there, the questions and the interest and the intrigue start to come, and they've been coming for probably about 4 months, 5 months. And what you find is that when you live in the bubble that is, the celebrity here in LA, it's reported upon, and people are interested to know what you're doing, especially if you have somewhat of a public life already coming into a new relationship. And in our case, we really truly wanted to take the time to find out if being in a relationship together was something that we both wanted, enjoyed, and it's always that first six months where you're giving your best, you're on your best behavior, but then you have to work through, the challenges that are a relationship, and you find out whether or not you want to actually do that together. And we had gotten past that point, but we would keep getting photographed together. People would find us at places and want to know, and they want to ask. And so we try to be as private as we could, which is difficult to do here in town. And eventually, when we get to a place where you really realize that you're comfortable, being together and sharing life publicly, then it becomes that place where you tell people, and it almost makes it go away to a degree, because you're actually now the curiosity or the intrigue or the uncertainty is removed, and you can go forth in your life.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck with that, and I want to tell everybody that you can catch former L.A. Laker and now Melrose Place star Rick Fox live in Los Angeles on October 24th. when he hosts Acme Comedy Theater's Acme Saturday Night. You can order tickets online at www.acmecomedy.com. Or, if you can't make it to the show, watch it stream live online at the same address, www.acmecomedy.com. And, of course, watch him soon on the CW as a new addition to Melrose Place, Tuesdays, 9 p.m., and you can follow him at his own website, www.rickfox.com. Rick, you're a good guy, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right. Good luck Saturday.
Thank you, man. Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye. And for more interviews with your favorite actors and athletes, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with actors Kirk Douglas, Billy Bob Thornton, Bai Ling, and actors and athletes, pardon me, such as Bill Romanowski, Brandi Chastain, Carrie Strug, Amy Alcott, and many more. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlam, blogcritics.org, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Audio. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.